This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent and diverse campus community radio from Simon Fraser University.
Today on Wings, we reprise our report on the December 2000 Women's International War Crimes Tribunal on Japan's military sexual slavery.
To fulfill its responsibility, the tribunal holds that the government of Japan must provide each of the following remedial measures. Acknowledge.
You have heard the stories of immense suffering of the comfort women. Nobody was able to deal with our story.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In the early 1990s, women broke almost five decades of painful silence to demand apologies and compensation for the atrocities they and others suffered under Japanese military sexual slavery in the 1930s and 1940s in the Asia-Pacific region. The survivors, euphemistically called comfort women, came forward to recount how they were conscripted and trafficked through force, coercion, and deception, and confined to comfort stations, or more accurately, sexual slavery facilities, wherever Japanese troops were situated, including on the front lines. The survivors have endured and struggled with the long-term effects of sexual violence and servitude, damage to their reproductive capacity, and harm to their social relationships in marriage, work, and community. The Women's International War Crimes Tribunal on Japan's Military Sexual Slavery sat in Tokyo from December 8th until December 10th, 2000, and took testimony of survivors, experts, and perpetrators. The Register of the Tribunal served the Prime Minister of Japan with notice of proceedings and provided representatives of the State of Japan with an invitation to participate in the proceedings. The Japanese government did not respond to the invitation. Prosecutors filed an indictment charging high-ranking Japanese government and military officials, including Emperor Hirohito, with crimes against humanity and with criminal responsibility for crimes against humanity, particularly rape and sexual slavery. The tribunal was established because the World War II Allied powers did not prosecute Japanese officials for these crimes at the International Criminal Tribunal for the Far East, held between 1946 and 1948, this despite the fact that the Allies possessed evidence of sexual slavery. On December 12th, with over 75 survivors present, the tribunal issued its preliminary findings. The tribunal rendered its final judgment at The Hague on December 3rd and 4th, 2001. We now bring you the testimonies of two comfort women. What you will hear is frank, disturbing, and at times graphic. Juliette Cheneau, prosecutor from Malaysia, reads the written testimony of the late Madam X.
We do know Madam X's real name. She wrote this in her testimony, but we are unable to divulge it today because of the need to protect her family still in Malaysia. Testifying as to her recruitment by duress and force, Madam X, dated 26th of August, 1996, in 1942, I was 16 years old, living with my parents and younger brother in Serdang, which is on the outskirts of Kuala Lumpur. My father and younger brother were rubber tappers. My mother and I worked at home, raising pigs and vegetable gardening. The Japanese occupation made my father and brother stop tapping rubber. They stayed at home and helped in pig raising and vegetable gardening. On 22nd of March, 1942, when we were working at home, two truckloads of Japanese soldiers stopped in front of our house. A Chinese man led the Japanese soldiers into our house. They arrested my brother. My father came forward to beg the Japanese soldiers not to take my brother away, but they killed him. My mother was also killed, but after she had been raped by them in front of me. I did not have any opportunity to run away and was raped by 3 Japanese soldiers. They then took me away in a truck. I resisted and was kicked in the head and forced inside. Subsequently, I was given 4 stitches in the head wound. As to imprisonment in the comfort station, Madam X testified they took her to a bungalow in what they call the Ampang building. Ampang is a road in Kuala Lumpur. And they locked her up in a room. She said that their every move was monitored and that she and other women who were captured with her were not allowed to go out of the house, nor could they communicate with one another. She had also been held at the Taishan Hotel and the comfort station at Jalan Tun Razak, both ran by Madam Choi Chow and her husband Ayong. She also recalled, one day a worker at the comfort station said that the Japanese had killed many Chinese and had hung their head at crossroads and junctions all over Kuala Lumpur. I begged Madam Sai Chu to allow me to go and search for my brother among these heads. She agreed. I left on a rickshaw with an escort, so at all times she was escorted. She was never free at any moment. She was only freed at the end of the war in 1945. Madam X recalled, one day I saw Europeans march into the city. We were let out of the comfort stations and told to flee. None of the Japanese or Chinese traitors wanted us around. They were frightened. We could point the finger at them. The girls in our station caught our mama's son and her husband and drowned them both. I went back to Serdang. Testifying to sexual slavery, Madam X said in the Ampang bungalow used by the high-ranking Japanese soldiers, she was raped by a Japanese soldier every night and by 5 or 6 Japanese soldiers in the day. After a month there, she was taken to Taishan Hotel and put under Madame Choi Chow's control. Their life was inhuman. Every night, she was raped by 10 to 20 soldiers. Enforced sexual slavery is not abrogated by payments for the services. At times, Madam X had been paid, and this is what she had to say for payment. The mama son also took half of all the money we earned. The officers paid us the best. They had 3 stars, and they came at night and paid us $4 straight. Dollars, meaning the Straits settlement, Penang, Malacca, and Singapore. Half of it goes to Mama San. In the beginning, we were paid in the white man's money, which were the Straits dollars. But later, we got more and more Japanese money, which at the end of the war became worthless. Some of the girls had savings of over 2,000 yen, but they lost the lot. Fortunately, I had some straight dollars as well as yen. We were paid first in chips or tickets, which we cashed at the end of the month. I never received any tips, but at least in the Taishan Hotel, I was paid. In the first 2 places, I was not paid at all. The ordinary soldiers were only allowed to stay 1 hour and had to pay $2 or yen. Some of them gave me jewelry which they had stolen when they looted houses. Unfortunately, I had to sell the jewelry after the war in order to live because most of my savings were worthless. On pain and suffering, Madam X recalled, because the acts comprised of continuous and multiple rapes, Madam X recalled that she often suffered from stomach cramps and bleeding at the vaginal. When she could no longer cooperate in the sexual acts, she was also kicked and beaten. She testified as to her rejection by society at the end of Second World War. Madame X said that upon her return to her village in Serdang, the villagers spat at her for having been a sex slave to the Japanese. Her uncle had to take her away to another town called Seremban. She also testified to the loss of her reproductive capacity due to the rapes. And in 1963, her womb had become so infected that it had to be removed. She testified to the post-traumatic stress syndrome and other illnesses that accompanied her for the rest of her life. Madame X testified that she had been unable to find relief from the psychological and physical pain caused by the rapes. She married in 1950 to a man who was kind and understanding. He knew that she was not a virgin and that she was unable to give birth. Nevertheless, he told her that he loved her and was not bothered with her past. He even taught her how to read as she was illiterate. They adopted two daughters together. And she said in her testimony, "I had a loving husband and a happy family. I should have been very blessed. However, the rape by the Japanese soldiers destroyed all that. I was haunted by the fact that I had been a comfort woman. I hated making love and refused to do it, so much so that my husband left me and he went to stay with another woman. At first, he still came home and provided for the family. But in 1962, he abandoned me altogether." Madame X suffered tremendously from ill health brought about by the rapes. She testified, "My health had also been poorly. I suffered from pain in the stomach and often fell sick. In 1962, I had stomach ulcers. I was hospitalized due to the bleeding and required 4 pints of blood transfusion. Eventually, I recovered. Since 1961, when her husband left her, I had been ill and working all the time in spite of ill health. Now I have 4 different chronic illnesses and need long-term medical treatment. I have lost my ability to work, and this seriously affects my economic situation. All these have been brought upon me by the Second World War."
During the war in the Asia Pacific, sexual slavery facilities were established in China, Taiwan, Korea, the Philippines, Indonesia, East Timor, Malaysia, and Papua New Guinea. The Japanese military also recruited Japanese women and established comfort stations on the Japanese island of Okinawa. Jan Ruff O'Hearn is a survivor of Dutch descent who was enslaved in Indonesia.
"You have heard the stories of immense suffering of the comfort women. And that suffering didn't end with the end of the war. In fact, the war really never ended for us. The atrocities that were done to us by the Japanese would haunt us for the rest of our lives. The Japanese had stripped us comfort women of everything. They took away our possessions. They took us away from our family. They took our self-esteem, our dignity, our youth. When I was given that lily, that flower, earlier on today, it reminded me how the Japanese ripped the flower of our youth away from us. Our beautiful young bodies became soiled and damaged goods. The shame, I think, was something we all shared, and it was this shame that it took us 50 years to be able to tell our stories. The shame was the feeling of being dirty, of being different, being spoiled, being soiled. And we were terrified that anybody would ever find out what had happened to us. The shame was so great. We kept our silence and this burden within us. At times, I would have loved to have screamed it out, but we never did because we were so ashamed. When the war had finished, we had to go on with our lives as if nothing had happened. And we had no counseling, nobody to turn to. And even when we tried to tell our story, it fell on deaf ears, or people just couldn't cope with it. I remember when the war was over, I always wanted to become a nun. I had a religious vocation. The war was over, and a priest, we were still in our prison camps, of course. We had nowhere else to go. And a priest was going to visit our camp. And I thought, I'll talk to a priest. I need to talk to a priest. I told him my story and said, I still want to become a nun. His answer was, under the circumstances, I think you better not become a nun. And again, I felt dirty, soiled, and ashamed. Just after the war, we were reunited with the other women in the big camp. I was called a whore. We were called a whore. Even our own women didn't believe that we were taken by force. That was another terrible thing to live with. The mothers tried to get a doctor to our camp to be able to examine us for venereal disease. And I remember when the doctor came to our camp, I didn't want to go. I didn't want to be examined because I remembered every time, every week when the doctor came to our house, he used to rape me first and allowed other people to watch while we were being examined. So the doctor examining me again, it was like being raped all over again. And this fear for doctors remained with me all my life. I never went to a doctor. My daughters always tell me, Mom, I've never known you going to a doctor. I've always had this terrible fear for doctors. I tried to tell my mother what had happened to me. I had to tell her. I told her the story, but she couldn't cope with it. It was never talked about again. So I had no help there. I told my father. He couldn't cope with it at all. There was always this fear that we would have venereal disease. And some of our girls did get venereal disease. And this fear was still with me when I met Tom, the British soldier I fell in love with, when the British troops were sent to protect us from being killed by the Indonesian freedom fighters. When Tom and I fell in love, I had to tell him my story, of course. I told the story to Tom, and he listened to it very quietly and understood. It did make no difference to Tom. He loved me just the same. And yet, we could never talk about this again. It was never talked about. Nobody was able to deal with our story. So later on, when I wanted to marry Tom, yes, I wanted marriage. I wanted a husband. I wanted a home, I wanted children, but I didn't want any sex. And Tom had to be very patient with me. I have never been able to enjoy sexual intercourse, which is a terrible thing for a woman to say. Because every time Tom would touch me, I would only be reminded of being raped over and over again by the Japanese. If only Tom and I could have talked about it, it could have helped. But nobody could cope with our story. So we just kept quiet. I was left with a body that was utterly broken. It needed to be repaired. I had 4 miscarriages and needed major operation before I could have children. I had 2 daughters eventually. All these things that happened to me and this fear that I endured during those months in the brothel, that fear has never ever left me. Sometimes it comes over me at the oddest moments. I can feel it again. I can feel it every night when I sit at home in my house in Tutt Avenue in Australia. I see it getting dark, and this fear comes over my whole body and still burns me up. Because when it's getting dark, it means being raped over and over again. I can never use gloves, just household rubber gloves. That's why I've got dreadful hands. Because gloves remind me of the doctor again. So no gloves. And so it is no end of things during your life that trigger it off. The fear, the memories. The nightmares are always there. Even after now almost 60 years, I still wake up in nightmares. The healing came eventually when I went to Japan in 1991, just exactly 10 years ago, when for the first time I told my story at the International Public Hearing in Tokyo. I did this to support the Korean comfort women, who were the first ones to come forward, and I became the first European comfort woman to speak. I remember meeting the comfort women, some of them are here, for the first time. And I remember the healing really started when we could embrace, when I could put my arms around these women and knew they are the only ones that understand how we suffered. Nobody can understand, only we. And it was in that embrace that the healing started and that the pain started to fall away. The tribunal gives an opportunity for the comfort women to meet one another and to find this healing just being together. Even if we can't speak each other's language, we can still hold hands and embrace. I realized that to be able to go on with my life, I have to be able to forgive. And I proved that to the Japanese people in 1991, when I laid a wreath of forgiveness on the tomb of the unknown Japanese soldier. And that again was a start of the healing process. I felt strongly that I didn't want to waste my suffering. I didn't want to be a victim. I wanted to be a survivor. I had to do something with this suffering for women, for women's human rights. And that is why for the past 10 years I have made it my mission to speak at conferences and forums for the protection of women in war, so that these atrocities against women will never ever happen again. I'd never want any woman to suffer as I did. And it is up to us women now to keep on telling our stories so that these things won't happen again. I have such an admiration for the Asian comfort women. They are such simple village women, and yet they have the courage, the strength, the determination to take on a powerful Japanese government and challenge them to give them justice and compensation. And I challenge the Prime Minister of Japan, Mr. Koizumi. I challenge him today at this tribunal. He's an honorable man, I think. He's a popular man. I hope that he's the one that will give justice to the comfort women and compensation. Thank you.
The Women's International War Crimes Tribunal is a people's tribunal, premised on the understanding that the law is an instrument of civil society that does not belong exclusively to governments. The tribunal found the accused individuals and the state of Japan guilty and legally responsible for the mass rapes and sexual slavery committed through the comfort system. While a people's tribunal cannot sentence or order reparations, it can make recommendations backed by the weight of its legal findings and its moral force.
To fulfill its responsibility, the tribunal holds that the government of Japan must provide each of the following remedial measures. Acknowledge fully its responsibility and liability for the establishment of the comfort system, and that this system was in violation of international law.
Issue a full and frank apology, taking legal responsibility and giving warranties of non-repetition. Compensate victim survivors and those entitled to recover as a result of the violations through the government and in amounts adequate to redress the harm and deter its future occurrence.
Establish a mechanism for the thorough investigation into the system of military sexual slavery, for public access and historical preservation of the materials. Consider, in consultation with the survivors, the establishment of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that will create an historical record of the gender-based crimes committed during the war, transition, and occupation.
Recognize and honor the victims and survivors through the creation of memorials and a museum and library dedicated to their memory and the promise of never again. Sponsor both formal and informal educational initiatives, including meaningful inclusion in textbooks at all levels, and support for scholars and writers to ensure the education of the population, and particularly the youth and future generations concerning the violations committed and the harm suffered.
Support training in the relation between the military slave system and gender inequality, and the prerequisites for realizing gender equality and respect for the equality of all the peoples of the region. Repatriate survivors who wish to be repatriated.
Disclose all documents or other material in its possession with regard to the comfort stations. Identify and punish principal perpetrators involved in the establishment and recruitment of the comfort stations. Locate and return the remains of the deceased upon the request of family members or close associates.
The tribunal further recommends that the former allied nations immediately declassify all military and governmental records concerning the establishment and the operation of comfort system and the reasons why it was not prosecuted.
The Women's International War Crimes Tribunal 2000 on Japan's military sexual slavery. Our thanks to FIRE, Feminist International Radio Endeavor, for recording the tribunal. Their website is www.fire.or.cr. For Wings, I'm Kelia Ramirez.
The Japanese Supreme Court consistently refuses to hear lawsuits for compensation by victims of wartime sexual slavery. But in November 2004, the court gave a new reason, saying the alleged slavery took place before the 1947 Constitution was adopted, so Japan is a different country now. 2 months later, Japan's Prime Minister announced he would close the Asian Women's Fund, a private fund that took money from the Japanese government to compensate victims with no admission of guilt. The fund reportedly made payments to fewer than 400 women. Women's groups protested the fund, saying it helped the government evade admissions of what happened. Even today, when proof is readily available, apologists claim that the Japanese military comfort system had only legal brothels, where women worked willingly, recruited by Korean pimps. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty, who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.